11:16 SEN. Crunch Time. Voted the most outstanding radio football program 2007, 10, 11 and 2013. For Ringwood Mazda, when it comes to the crunch, you won't get a better deal.
4 minutes past 12, this is Crunch Time. In a moment, we get into the crunch for the Savoy Tavern. It's the newest, oldest pub in town. It's just where you go to do a kappa. That in a moment. But a couple of quick calls first. Joe in Collingwood. G'day, Joe.
Good day. Good afternoon.
Listen, hello, Joe.
I'm an Essendon supporter for the last 40 years.
Yep.
In my book, I make it quick. Get rid of Hurd. I got nothing against him. Get an experienced coach. Leave Hurd as an assistant coach and give him a couple of years and they should come back. Because as long as he's with us, we're never going to get anywhere.
Give him a couple of years and come back. I don't think that'll happen.
I don't think that'll happen either, Joe.
We can put a line through that, I think.
Yeah, I like Joe.
You like Joe?
I like Joe. Yeah.
Well, you think they should do that?
I don't think they'll do that.
Do you think they should do that?
They probably should have done that right back at the start of the saga.
Is there any chance, and just on James Hurd saying at the end of the year, this is no good for either party. Me, my family, what we're going through, and the Essendon Football Club, maybe we just need to put a line through this.
There is a chance because he would even feel that his family's taken an enormous strain through this.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kids as well. Remember we had him on the other day a few weeks ago and he said, oh, the kids seem to know now and then the kids know when, gee, most of the photographers are gone.
Mm.
That's unusual. Mm. So it has been a strain on his family. So
he hasn't shown any signs, though, has he? Of
and you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't in season.
No.
And he can't show signs now, but I just think...
I thought last week...
He's an intelligent man, a highly intelligent man. I think at the end of the year he'll say, you know what, come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll depend on what happens in the next 6 weeks. I thought last week, I mean, they won the game. He said all the right things post-match and then comes on with the interviews on Sunday and... says those things about, you know, the AFL, and it just derailed what would have been was a really positive week for the club, and I just don't understand why he did that, really, to be honest. So maybe that, and Robbo wrote an article about the shock that the accident would have given him through the week, and again all along those lines that he's got to park that anger for the moment and just get on with things. But anyway, Tony's in East Malvern. G'day, Tony.
Hey, David and Dermy
and Hutto.
And hello, long-time North supporter, watched you play Kingy. Now, I've got this question for you. So there's David off the half-back flank running through the midfield.
One bounce.
Unfortunately, watching Dermy Mark.
Two bounces.
Was half a dozen times at least. We're running through the midfield, uncontested, and we kick to our forward on the wrong side of his body.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? Did you notice that during the game?
I've seen that a lot lately. It's funny how things annoy you with footy.
Who was it in the first quarter went at express pace, showed real good wheels, and they ended up kicking to a one-on-three? Was it even Spud Ferrito?
He definitely did it. Yeah,
and because he got on was the fastest he's run for 10 years, old Spud, and he's kicked a bomb at the end through excitement.
Yeah.
He's kicked it to a one-on-three.
That's happening a lot. I mean, I don't know whether it's the point you made before about forwards can't get back, they can't reset, and when you come at them quickly, you're inviting the turnover, really.
Yeah.
I think that's why the change with clubs like Richmond has been so productive, because nothing's going helter-skelter pace. It gives them a chance to roll up defensively and it gives them a chance to reorganise forward of the footy. But it means you don't score. A lesser percentage of conversion.
To be surgical if you want to score.
Yeah. So that's the challenge for teams at the moment. The Kangaroos are no different.
12:07. It is time for the crunch with thanks to the Savoy Tavern. It's the newest, oldest pub in town. It's where you go off. Gazy saying off the SMS, it was Attlee as the other player
Attlee
who did that.
Okay.
Let's talk about, we won't just talk about the state of the game, but that has been the dominant topic of the week. So Chris Scott was our guest last night, and it was an interesting chat, for as it always is on the Friday night. If you haven't heard before, the coach's box from 6 to 7, have a senior AFL coach in. We talk all the issues. Chris Scott thought the AFL needs to be bold with whatever decision it makes if they want to trial changes.
As it stands at the moment, in the boundary throw, and if the ruckman hits it out on the full, it's deliberate.
Yeah. Mm.
So if a backman, and we're talking between the arcs, so it's a bit harsh inside forward 50 or D50, but if a defender hits the ball over the line, maybe that's deliberate.
Yeah.
Maybe if you don't do everything you possibly can to keep the ball in, maybe that's deliberate. I think that's probably the first step. But to all these points, I'm starting to come to the view that not only should the AFL make a bold decision, but they should trial these things in season on the basis that the rules are the same for everyone. If everyone has enough time to work through what they are, have their say, adapt their game style or their personnel as required, let's have a look at over the course of the season. And in the context of the game and where we want it to be in 20 years, let's say it's an unmitigated disaster and it just doesn't work and the supporters hate it. How much have we really lost? This fiddling around at the edges through the NAB Cup doesn't prove or disprove anything.
So that was one thing Chris said. And I mean, I think one thing he's talking about there, it is so difficult with whatever we come up with to actually know how it's going to play out, because it might play out a certain way for 2 or 3 weeks, and then 6 weeks later, it's being played out a totally different way as clubs find their way around it.
Yeah, what do we call it? The evolution of the game. The coaches will eventually work a way through it. But I heard you speaking during the week, David, as well, saying that you've got to get the coaches in the room. I reckon the coaches will buy into the greater good of the game as long as they know it's a blanket call across the 17 other coaches. So I reckon they'll buy into that. And then I think it was you last night, Hutto, who said, what about by the end of the year when it's no longer mathematically possible for two teams to make the finals, we trial it on their game?
I said that off air.
I just thought I'd throw that in there.
I tell you what, you're playing a dangerous game. You start with the off air stuff on air. You can't win that game, I'm telling you, just on sheer lifestyle.
I'd like to retract that last question.
Look, I think that if you've got 4 or 5 coaches in the room, you can't get one. If you get one, he'll tailor to suit himself. If you get two, they could have the same idea for the betterment of their clubs or their positions or their philosophies on the game. But if you've got 4 or 5, and I think when we look at what's happened this season and the work that Alistair Clarkson, Nathan Buckley, Ross Lyon in particular have done for the betterment of the game as ambassadors of the game, then I think we need to trust them more. Don't tell them what changes we've made. Ask them what changes we should make.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt they should be part of the, definitely be a strong part of the conversation. As to who ultimately makes the decisions, I'm not sure.
They won't make the decision, but they'll tell us, if you do that, if you have this last touch out of bounds rule, we won't spoil the ball at all. The game will become a nonsense.
Yeah,
they may educate us.
Yeah. Will reducing the interchange cap to 80 make any real difference, do you think?
No, none at all. None at all. I think the biggest misnomer is that the cap size will change the game.
Disagreement with you on that one. I reckon it's rather than change rules, change things on the outside first rather than the rules. You've got areas that, as we were saying last night, are malleable, maybe less time for the tackled player in holding the ball. That's an interpretation. That's not changing the rule. That's an interpretation, a tightening on an interpretation. But we saw in rugby union, in world standards, test rugby union, you know, some 15 years ago, 10 years ago, scoring was almost impossible. The defensive techniques that all these nations started making, full-time academies, full-time coaches, full-time employees, to study and nitpick each sideways step of every team in defence. No one could score. And then they realised that, you know what, we've got a completely fresh line coming up in defence against the oncoming attacking team. How about if we put a bit of fatigue back into them? We disallow so many rotations. And I know that's a game with an offside rule, but isn't it worth exploring?
But is 80 enough? First? Would 80 be enough of a reduction to really have an impact?
We had 170 2 years ago in most games. We've come down to 140. Now we're about 118, 117.
And there's more stoppages than ever.
There's more stoppages. The players are getting rest at stoppages.
Yeah.
If you take rotations off them, they'll park behind the football, which will make it harder for us to score again.
Yeah, but once it gets out the front way and you have somebody up the other
end, worth looking
at
I
wouldn't
Let's
like
look at
to
it.
See...
40.
There'd be 14 teams who don't want to leave Tom Hawkins against their key backman.
That's what
out
I'm saying.
The other side, so it's worth a look.
All right, just finally then on this, because we could talk forever. We spoke a long time about it last night. Chris Scott had a really interesting thing that he brought to the table late in the discussion.
Trying to remove myself from coaching and winning and losing each week, and looking at it purely in terms of the spectators and who we want to be watching the game in 20 years. And we've got to make it attractive for the kids. I've heard the view recently that the game should be much shorter. Not at the margin, not 10 minutes here, 8 minutes there, much shorter. Instead of 115, 120 minutes, 80 minutes. Two halves, very short half time. Make it snappy, make it punchy for the people watching at home. And if 10-year-old kids go to the footy on a Friday night, they're getting home in a decent hour and encourage the parents to bring them along. Now, I know that's radical, but as we discussed before, I think we should explore all the reasons why it would work before we dismiss it out of hand. I know there are short-term issues with the broadcasters, there are revenue issues, there's a whole range of things that would need to be considered.
What about the historical distortion of the actual way that the sport's been played then?
That would be significant. Now, I don't want to offend anyone at home that values the historical parts of our game, but I think the future of the game is more important than...
Yep, okay.
I think, the good of the game far outweighs any of those considerations, and there might be a trade-off as well. It might not be that the games are shorter and we have the same number of games. Maybe we can actually get more footy because the players will recover quicker, we could have a longer season...
Interesting. I think Ross Lyon was one that threw up something vaguely similar to that a couple of years ago.
They're all great ideas. None of them are right or wrong. They're all opinion. We need to throw them onto a board. 15, 20 ideas, whatever we come up with, and then just allow a summit to organise and prioritise which ones are first looked at.
Get into your book for a start that you have so often open in front of you. How long are the prescribed breaks meant to be? Is it 20 minutes is the main break, I think?
Six and 20.
6 and 20.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you've got 32 minutes of breaks, an hour.
It's actually a long time, isn't it, the 20-minute break at halftime?
Six is a long time.
But the problem is...
You only need four.
We had a game of EFL last week. I spent this during the week. That had 201 stoppages in it. That's almost 37 minutes of football lost. Of 37 minutes of game time lost. While the umpire blows his whistle, resets, throws the ball in the air, or throws the ball back in. And people say, oh, but the clock stops. The clock stops, but there's always a lag time. That's just too much. That is just killed minutes. And if we're talking about reducing the time of games to, say, 80 minutes, how much time do you lose through a stoppage? We'll end up playing, it'll be like a Lightning Premiership. We'd play 50 minutes of actual football.
7 minutes each way.
Anything could happen.
Quite a bit of feedback off the SMS, one way or the other, but there is a lot of people out there saying, leave the game alone. If it isn't broken, don't fix it. Trying to turn our great game into kiss chasey. Ask the loyal supporters what they want, not coaches. They just get out-coached. So,
well, I don't think Alistair Clarkson's been out-coached too often, has he?
No, I don't think so.
That's the one thing, and say to leave our great game alone, I can totally understand that, because I still find...
But it's changed.
...really interesting to go to the footy, and I love the game.
But if you don't
identify a problem while it is actually occurring, it turns into a fully-fledged problem. And what I hope is we don't lose before something gets fixed up 10 years down the track. This out there right now, there's a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old bunch of kids. I hope they don't look at our game over the next 4 years and decide, I'm playing soccer, and we really miss the best generation of sporting talent that goes and plays soccer instead of AFL.
The game at local level has never been further away than what it is at AFL level. They are two different codes right now. You challenge people who follow AFL to go and watch a high-standard game of local footy and have a look at how different it is to what we're trying to teach at AFL. Everyone talks about the under-18 kids coming into the system and they have to virtually reprogram them, re-educate them.
Yeah, their polls are paid.
That's a problem. Yeah. And this is a problem now with local level.
Coming back off the SMS, guys, sitting here watching local footy, amazement, no rolling malls, love it. Hi, guys, if we can't reduce congestion, very soon we'll lose fans to the game. I know at least 20 people that are going less to games because of congestion. The game is broken, so can't leave it alone. So it's just as strong back the other way.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on at 18 past 12, talk about some other issues in footy. Can you see Fremantle bridging the gap on the Hawks between now and the end of the year?
Can't see it, but I reckon they will get better. They know, let's say, not that you always play six forwards these days, but let's say you have to name six forwards, and predominantly they run in and out of that forward line. They know one good one, And their second good one actually is their best ruck rover, Fife.
Their second, if you want to go their third best one, plays fullback. I'm a big believer they have to put McPharlin to full forward. Have a look at it, get their forward line. Their team defends so well, they're not reliant on a fullback.
I don't know if Dawson could do it anymore.
Dawson's nearly back. Well, he's the only one that's kicked. He's kicked five bags of five throughout his career. So he's capable of Still got wheels, still got smarts, still knows how to, he's a seasoned body now, he understands the game. They got kids like Tabanet who just don't quite get the right spots all the time and they're easily zoned off. I think they need to take a risk. I still think they can do it. They're the only team, in my opinion, that can keep the Hawks to below 75, 80 points on a given day. They didn't do it last week, but they can do it. They've done it three of the last six occasions.
And for the reason we saw last night, Goldstein controlled that game last night. Sandilands can control games.
It's an interesting question that you've posed in reverse there, Kingy. Which is the team that could actually challenge Hawthorn the most? Who would they least like to play, do you think, on grand final day?
I'll just throw one at you. I always think Sydney, Hawthorn have mainly, in the main, got Sydney's measure, even though they rolled them last time.
Every now and then you just slip into Ellen Jean.
Mainly.
Sorry about that.
We like it.
But
we
like it. When they're coming up now, Hawthorn, and they're playing this forward press, it opens themselves to the possibility of one over the top and the downhill ski race to the goal square at the other end. And that's where Jetta becomes very dangerous to Hawthorn's makeup. So they now have a bit of a weapon against Hawthorn, whereas the way they used to play, they could sort of deal with that. He had to come through traffic and they could bottle it a bit. But if he gets cut grass in front of him and somebody chasing, well, we saw Cyril, who's lightning. Well, Cyril probably got him over 10 metres, 15 metres. But once it gets 12 and beyond, I don't think anyone can catch
that
him.
That got personal last time. Look,
wasn't that a highlight?
What happens tonight, if Sydney get beaten by 60 points tonight, we'll be sitting back saying, you know what, there isn't a contender out there for the Hawks. At the MCG, that's what we'll be saying.
Big if.
Well, you've still got to beat them at the MCG. If they get to top two, which we all think they will, then there's alarm bells. You've still got to go through Chicago. It's the old Michael Jordan. You've still got to go through Chicago. You can't beat the Hawks at the MCG.
The main reason I think Sydney struggle with Hawthorn is that Hawthorn force Sydney's defenders to defend, and not all of them are good at defending.
I think they're in trouble at the moment, Sydney. They'll need a big improvement on where they're at.
And Hawthorn also force you to defend pretty well every kick they make, and Sydney don't do that. So I reckon that they're the two main aspects. I think Hawthorn probably shade Sydney, but as I said, the new generation of the new theory of Hawks, that squeeze up press over the back, Jet is real dangerous.
A couple of weeks, we see the West Coast at home against the Hawks.
Is there another team, and could it be West Coast?
And they're doing something different. I think you need to have an asset, a major asset, to come up against the top four or five teams to throw at them. The Kangaroos showed last night that Goldstein may be able to offer that. Sandilands is the same. Nick Nat's the same. They've got the best ruckman, the Coleman medalist, the reigning Brownlow medalist, and the best centre-half back intercept marker in the comp in Mitch McGovern down there. So they've got assets that they can throw at Hawthorn.
Will the web, Jared has dubbed it, will that work against the Hawthorn team with the way they can move the ball?
It'll be fascinating to see. But I tell you what, if it does, every team will be playing with the web in about 8 minutes' time after that, if that works.
Let me ask you one thing. When they play Fremantle again, if I held a gun to your head, put your money on it, who would you back?
I'm a huge fan of Ross Lyon coached teams. I just think that they're consistent. Then it may not be good enough. They may not have the weapons that the other team have. But again, that's only about 2-3 weeks
not
away
that
as
far
well.
Away.
So there's some big games to come that'll answer a lot of questions.
All right. How hard/tough should Geelong go on the older players come the end of the season? And I guess how many of them are playing for their future over the last 6 to 7 weeks? You're looking at the likes of Stevie J, Enright, maybe even Lonigan, Bartel, Rivers, Mackie, McIntosh, names that have been thrown up.
I would think a few of them will go, have to go. But there's some that you still can't cut out your your devotion to the club, the players, who they've all devoted themselves to the club. They're wonderful champions. But, gee, Enright, if he wants to go, he's one you'd put the ball in his court. If he wants to go again, his form's been way good enough to make his own mind up. But there's a couple there that they need to make the Paul Chapman decision with. Now, Chappie has been a wonderful player and he's gone to Essendon now. But, see, Chappie now will probably get cast aside by Essendon because they don't really owe him anything. They gave him a home short term.
Yep.
But you would have loved, he'd probably look back and say, you know, I still thought I had something to offer the game. But in 20 years' time, he might say, I'm a Geelong person through and through.
Would he have been better in hindsight to stay at Geelong and play one more year as the, you know, maybe play a bit of VFL and be the sub, or has he been better to do what he's
done? No one wants to do that.
No.
No one wants to end that way. I think the right decision was made for both parties in the end. You know, Geelong said they need to move past him, they need to give some kids some more opportunities. And Essendon said, well, we haven't got the ability to get the kids in. Let's bring Chappie on board. So it was a win-win for both. The thing with Geelong is they've probably acted ahead of time. Some clubs say, if you choose to play the extra year, we'll respect you and you can do that. But Geelong have probably gone the other way. We think you've got 10 games left in you. We would like to act now rather than 10 games the other way.
Well, yeah. Of that list, is there two that definitely, or two or three that you think definitely should play next year? Stevie should. J, Enright, Lonergan, Bartel, Mackey, McIntosh, Rivers.
Go through them slowly. Don't just reel them off.
Stevie J.
He'll play again.
He will play again. Yeah. I would say the coaching staff will encourage him to think deeply about his decision.
Ooh. What does that mean? They'll tell him to go?
No, they just won't give him a surety that he'll be played every week.
Enright, you've talked about.
Yep.
Yeah. Lonergan?
Stay on.
Yep. Stay on.
No, Bartel, I think we'll definitely stay on, personally. Came back and had 41 disposals last week.
That's pretty handy. You're mounting a very good case.
Mackey, who... Mackey's an interesting one.
Bartel one is, and that's only because size and shape. And that is, he's never had great pace, but what pace he has, he's lost. He's lost his agility to spring off the ground. So you can't play him back because he can't chase a smaller, agile opponent, and he's not big enough to play on a tall opponent. You play him forward, he's lost the ability to be a lead-up mark, a third man up over the top. Still a good player, his game knowledge. And in the middle of the ground, he doesn't cover the ground as much as the other. The ball has to stay in. He'd be one who should be fighting for no change to the way the game's played. He'd be saying, yeah, leave it at as is, because he can win the seriously hard ball. So he's one to put the watch this space on.
This SMS is an interesting one. Gia was a super sub, and they asked me if I think before I speak, which is quite accurate.
Yeah, good question.
Good question at times. Gia was a super sub, but whilst he was the sub, you weren't playing the Rovat, Hunter, next wave talent. And I don't think Geelong can carry six of those guys.
No. Yeah.
They can't. They've got to make a decision on a couple of them.
See, because the top teams, and Hawthorn, let's say they're the reigning premier, they always use the sub as a soft intro for players.
Yeah.
Like players who come in and become regular. Bradley Hill.
Yeah.
He was the sub six times in 1 year. The year before him, it was Luke Bruce was the sub seven times in 1 year. They use it as a soft intro to get their young player with talent up to league speed.
Get some minutes into them rather than games.
Yeah.
Mac,
yeah.
Just quickly, Mackie's an interesting one to me. I would say stay for sure, but there are a few people saying
that. You're not going to have Enright, Lonergan and Mackey all stay. You can't have the whole half-back
line. Well, Rivers' body is still a question mark as well, probably. So, anyway, we'll move on to other teams. Are you happy with the response of both Sam Mitchell and Joel Selwood to their sanctions?
Well, I am. You run at somebody, shepherds you. As long as they don't punch you. If you run into somebody with your running motion and knee clips you, that's forever and a day that's been happening. Forever and a day. And there's ways for the bumping player to protect themselves against that. Don't just make it. You're going to bump somebody and say, hey, it's up to you to be nice and fair and genteel about this. That ain't going to happen.
I think that Sam Mitchell will still find it hard to shake this. He'll find it hard to change that last second mechanism of defence. He'll find it hard to change that. I don't know if he can come out definitively and say, yep, the game said I'm doing the wrong thing. I need to make changes. He won't be able to change that, Derm.
I'm in heated agreement. Why would he want to? Why does he need to?
because he's going to get suspended.
No, I know, but
and we're talking about this
that's
is
because we've got. Yeah.
But it becomes serious now because we're around 16 this week. The next occasion that he does that will probably be another fine, and then you're likely if you see it the next month. He'll have that hanging over his head through a finals campaign if we see it again. I hope we don't see it again, but I've got a feeling we will.
Yeah, the bloke got a cork thigh. He didn't punch him in the head. You're allowed to run up behind somebody and elbow them in the small of the back. You're allowed to run past somebody and jumper punch them or gut punch them, and you can get away with that.
Yeah.
But no, gee, don't run at somebody in your natural running motion and then just protect yourself with a knee as you get to them.
Is that one of your moves? You had quite a few different moves. Is that one of yours?
Yeah, that was sort of like after you bounce off the turnbuckle.
All right, just before we finish, we'll come back and talk trades, boom and bust potentially at the end of the year.
Jeez, I thought you were giving up boom at that.
Job Watson.
Did you say boom's a bust?
Boom or bust.
Oh, sorry.
Job Watson, speaking last night, he did the media rounds last night, was with us pre-game. Ask the question, is there any chance Job Watson could still give the game away, or if he hadn't have had this injury, whether he would have? Let's listen to Job first.
I think I needed some breathing air. You know, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, where I was heading. There was not a love for the game. So I don't think it is such a bad thing for me.
What do you think?
Whoa. Jeepers. Yeah, that's... I hadn't heard that. I was rostered out at that stage.
Rostered out?
Yeah. Rostered out to Foxtel at that stage. Talking to you down the line, numbnuts.
I hadn't heard that either. Yeah, rostered out?
Rostered out. I find that strange from your captain. I would think that every minute, no matter what the injury has happened, he needs to be saying, I'm loving this club, I'm loving this.
But clearly he's not.
Probably
clearly
a little bit too honest there for my liking if I was part of the Bombers.
Clearly the whole saga has got him to that point that he's just not liking it at all.
We haven't had a player or a captain, however you want to label it, have to hold firm and hold strong like they've had to for 2.5 years, like Job's had to. He's borne the front of the media heat. He's had to be the spokesman for the club. He's had to hold things together internally. The players have come to him week after week after week in droves for his support. I think it's a logical thing for him to get to the end of his tether. Now, whether that costs him his love for the game, I wouldn't have thought it would have. But hearing that, maybe it hits home.
I don't doubt that's the scenario. It's strange hearing it.
He's honest.
Absolutely. What he's honest. I applaud his honesty. But there's certain things I just...
You don't like
wouldn't
honesty
want to hear
at all
that
times.
Oh, mate! Hey, we're in this caper of football. Honesty's got very little to do with it.
29:01. Ben Dixon joins us from crownbet.com.au. G'day, Dicko.
G'day, Hutto. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate.
Fun stuff. Boys, in the Geelong Bulldogs game, Cats still favourites, $1.68. Bulldogs 2.45 in this one. The line's only 9.5, but all the money's been for Geelong. They were $1.65. Good support now, 1.58. So favourites in that game. And the 2.10 game, the Gold Coast Suns still outsiders at the 2.30 mark. The Giants have been well supported, $1.65. The line is 6.5, and our July special, boys, for especially these two games, which might be a chance. If you back a team in the head-to-head market, they get to 80 points and lose the game, you'll receive a match bonus bet of $100, and if you're gambling across the weekend, do so responsibly.
Thank you, Dicko. It's 29:01. Coming up after the break, the Saturday Spotlight and the boom or bust trades that are ahead. And we'll do a full preview of tonight's games, or today's games. That Geelong Bulldogs game is a terrific one, and obviously two huge games. Twyla, we're heading off to Doom. Collingwood and West Coast.
That's a monster game.
It's a big game, and as we've already discussed briefly, Hawthorn and Sydney. We'll talk more about that coming up. It's 28:01. With thanks to Ringwood Mazda. When it comes to the crunch, you won't get a better deal. This is Crunch Time.